You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Let's bring in Chris Sims, Pro Football Talk, of course, the former NFL quarterback. How do you explain that, Chris?
Well, wait, first off, I mean, you left me some good candy there, all right? I mean, who are you going to vote for in the Heisman?
I'm not allowed to say it. They don't want us to say it publicly, or I would tell you privately, but I'm not allowed to say it publicly.
All right, cool. I understand that. You can text me later.
Who would you vote for?
I would vote for Trevor Lawrence. I would. He's the best player in college football for my money. It's unforeseen circumstances, COVID-19, all of that. That shouldn't hinder him as far as, you know, what the vote or what the award really stands for. So I would go with Trevor.
If you were Trevor, would you rather go to the Jets or the Jags?
Oh, the Jaguars probably have a little bit more in place as far as talent on the offensive side of the ball and even some young talent on the defensive side of the ball. You know, that to me is going to be more of the decision of, do you want to live in the big lights of New York or do you want to be kind of under the radar in Jacksonville? What suits like the style of life you want to live too? So, ultimately, I think probably at this point right now, the Jags are set up a little bit better team-wise than the Jets, who have a lot of holes to fill.
But you also look at Eli Manning, doesn't seem like the New York kind of guy. Your father, who played for the Giants, is not a New York kind of guy.
Right.
Joe Namath, those days are long gone. Namath loved, you know, the bright lights and Broadway Joe, but you don't. Sam Darnold is not a bright lights New York City kind of guy either. I know the pressure, the expectation level would be so high if Trevor Lawrence goes to the Jets. It feels like he would get a little bit more of a easing in period in Jacksonville.
I would agree. I mean, you come, you know, like you're talking about, you come up to New York, the spotlight's on you immediately. And then, of course, it's going to be added on to that is the fact that, whoa, they got rid of a top three quarterback pick to take on Trevor Lawrence. So how does that guy do on his new team? And that's going to add to the spotlight and just the overall, you know, attention around the whole scenario. But to your point with like my dad, Eli Manning, Sam Darnold, even, you know, I think Trevor Lawrence has that too, where, yeah, they're not like, it's even keel. It's throw a touchdown, throw an interception. You're not really sure which one they did. It's the same look on their face either way. And I think there is something to that in the New York City area, as far as balancing your life and all the, you know, the fans and all the attention around you at all times.
Yeah, it feels like it's the expectation level is going to be so high because the Jets are so thirsty. The Jags almost went to the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. The Jets, you know, they get to watch the Super Bowl. But I also wondered about this yesterday. We got over the shock of the Jets beating the Rams. If I'm the Rams, what did I expose yesterday that's going to come back and haunt me? Or is this just a one-off that the Jets caught him at the right time? But are there bigger issues with the Rams as we look past this Jets upset?
I think I said this to you 2 weeks ago when I was on a Monday, where to me there's one big issue with the Rams football team, and it's really about the only issue because they're really well-rounded in just about every area. But there it was again, Dan. Just go back and look at the Rams' schedule. Any game their offense struggles, it's lack of run game, and then the bootleg passes aren't there. And just quite honestly, you know, the drop-back pass game as far as scheme, and then Jared Goff in the drop-back pass game and his ability to do things that way, pocket passer being a, you know, surgical that way and making plays off schedule, this is not the strengths of the Rams. So they got themselves in a hole, and then they couldn't run the ball, and the bootlegs were gone, and it just all kind of funneled out of control from there.
Is there a Super Bowl contender in the NFC West?
Yes, I do believe that the Seahawks, to me, are a Super Bowl contender. There's no doubt. The Seahawks have played better defense the last 5 or 6 weeks. Really, ever since they left Josh Allen and that loss up in Buffalo, they've been better. You know, I think you see their run game has shown inklings of popping up here. And in a year with no great defenses in football, you know, this is why I took Seattle versus Kansas City in the Super Bowl anyways, because of the no offseason. I thought the defenses would be handicapped. I just think playoff football is going to lend itself to the great quarterbacks kind of taking over in the big moments with no crowd noise and all of that, with no great defenses, and it's just going to favor those kind of guys. So, yes, Russell Wilson, the Seahawks, are contender.
Were you a Josh Allen guy prior to the draft? I didn't think you were.
I was. He was my number one quarterback that year. Yeah.
Really?
I mean, big Josh Allen. I kind of stood Lamar is number one, and Josh Allen is two in my first rankings. And honestly, Dan, I made a deal with myself. I backed off of Lamar number one because I got so much crap from my NFL friends. Man, Lamar number one, are you crazy? I thought there was maybe something I didn't know, that maybe, you know, there was some character issues or something. But I got so trashed, I honestly backed off Lamar a little bit and ultimately made Josh Allen my number one guy. But yes, I was a huge Josh Allen fan.
If I said I got to take out Mahomes from the equation, quarterbacks under the age of 27 that you would take over Josh Allen.
To me that, and I'm just, you know, off the top of my head, I'm just going, only guy I'm thinking about really is him and Deshaun Watson. Those are those guys I think that are young, right? That fit that mold, what you're talking about. It's one of those two. Right now, Rodgers, Mahomes, Russell Wilson, I know in totality of their careers, they're better than Josh Allen and Deshaun Watson. But man, for 2020 football right now, week 15, I don't think you could say anybody's played better than Josh Allen this year except for Rodgers and Mahomes. And you see, like you saw Saturday night, he can carry the team at certain moments. Doesn't matter what has to be done. And I remind people, you know, that was the same Denver defense that wouldn't let the Chiefs in the end zone five different times, and Josh Allen got in the end zone. So he at least deserves to be in that conversation. I'm not saying he's there yet, but he's in that combo.
We're talking to Chris Sims, Pro Football Talk Live co-host with Mike Florio and, of course, the former NFL quarterback. Let's look at the Saints quarterbacking situation short-term, long-term here. What do you think?
Well, they got to go with Drew Brees now. I mean, he obviously was not at 100% yesterday. He didn't look comfortable. I mean, you watched it. You know, did he look comfortable at any point during that game? Looked jumpy in the pocket, right? Didn't look like real decisive with decisions. There was a lot of like, ooh, should I throw it there? Ooh, should I throw it? And he didn't know what to do with it. So they caught him on a rusty day. You know, of course, not hitting on all cylinders. But he's still the guy going forward, no doubt. I just hope they find the right balance of still letting Taysom Hill be a factor there. Because without Drew Brees' ability to really throw the ball down the field, I think they need that Taysom Hill run game package to just give them one other element to make defenses defend the whole field when you play the Saints. I think they just can't lose sight of that.
You look at Kansas City. They do keep teams in games, whether it's somebody really good like the Saints or, you know, can be some of these other teams here. But they seem to have an answer for everything. That's just it's the person who makes straight A's, but you go, how do they make straight A's? Because you're watching their study habits and you go, I don't know. Now they do it differently here.
You're right.
How dangerous? I mean, what's the flaw there?
I mean, the flaw is that they're just going to play with fire here one of these days and, you know, the wrong bounce of the ball or, you know, and just it's going to come down to that one play and they're not going to come through in the clutch. And you're going to go, man, they lost to a team that they're better than, and they didn't close the game out or, you know, they just were asleep at the wheel because they were unmotivated. That's the concern. But also, like, you know, yesterday – I think it also, again, shows their versatility, too. That's what's amazing. Oh, we're going to run the ball. We're going to play defense. And, you know, we're going to stop the run and make Drew Brees beat us throwing the football. You know, oh, this average Chiefs defense, yet when you ask them to do something, stop Derrick Henry in the AFC Championship game, slow down the Shanahan run game in the Super Bowl, they always rise to the occasion. So they're frustrating. I'm with you. And I don't think we've seen them play an A game the whole year. I think they played a lot of B and B plus games and they still win. And I'm annoyed by them. I'll say this though, their offense needs to be the one that closes these games out. That's where they're built. And that's the unit that needs to put some of these teams away as of late. And we just haven't seen them do that.
You sold on Baker Mayfield now?
I am. I think I think like the last 3-4 weeks, the way he's playing, I think he's finally just comfortable in the Stefanski offense, what's being expected of him. And Dan, there's a language between quarterback and play caller that, you know, I actually heard even, you know, Bruce Arians talking about this with Tom Brady yesterday. You know, they're speaking to you with some of their play calls more than just, hey, this is the play call. But really where an offense and an offensive coordinator get on the same page is, oh, wait, he's calling this play on second down because we talked about this 10 days ago. He's expecting me to look for the big shot play here, and if I don't have it, throw it away. You know, it's all those little nuances, I think, that they're finally getting together, and that's why you're seeing Baker just confident and playing awesome.
And I see young quarterbacks do this, and you played the position that – I got to throw the ball away. Like, it's hard. Your mentality is never, let me just throw it away. Your mentality is to make a play. It must be difficult for some of these younger quarterbacks to go, gosh, I got to just fall down, or I got to throw it away.
Right. Or throw the check down, right? They're not used to that. And I think that's where, you know, we got to give Baker a lot of credit. Think about it. He was at Oklahoma. It was throw it everywhere. And then he got with Hugh Jackson, and it was like, hey, awesome, let's throw it more. You're the first pick of the draft. And then last year they got Odell Beckham Jr., and they went, hey, let's throw it every play. Let's keep doing that. And then all of a sudden this year they were like, hey, whoa, we want you to hand the ball off and play smart and control the football. So that is an adjustment for a guy like that. And he's done really great in handling that. And they've matured off the field, too. I think that's another aspect you see with Cleveland that Stefanski's really brought to the team.
I'll leave you with this. I have three quarterbacks in their first 48 career starts. Three current quarterbacks. In their first 48 starts, these three quarterbacks went 28-20. The exact same record. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Aaron Rodgers was 28-20. Deshaun Watson, 28-20. Mitchell Trubisky, 28-20.
Yeah, I know. That's awesome. It's awesome. I'm happy for Mitchell Trubisky. That's a misleading stat, I'll say that much. Because two of those guys were doing a lot of it.
Do you
on
think
their own.
He's happy that you're happy for him, Chris?
I probably not. He's probably like, oh, I've heard that guy say negative things about me before. Screw him too. But I think that's the edge in which he's playing with. Like I heard Matt Nagy in the post-game press conference that he's a different man. Well, sometimes when you get benched and you sit over there and you go, man, I was making the game too complicated. And then also when you get back in, you just go, I'm taking no prisoners. You know, screw everybody, screw the coach, screw all this. I'm going to be a leader and not think too much and do all of that. And they found their way here. The best three offensive games of the whole season, the last 3 weeks, good for the Bears. And if you made me choose, I bet you they beat the Cardinals and end up in the seventh seed over the Cardinals. Yes, that would be my choice.
Whoa, I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Thank you.
Hey, happy holidays to you and the family. Thank you again for all the times you've joined us here on the program. We always appreciate your insights, and thanks for joining us, bud.
No, thanks. Thanks to you. Thanks to all the guys. Happy holidays to you. I appreciate you having me on.
That's Chris Sims,
buddy.
Pro Football Talk, and also you can see him on Football Night in America. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Andy Staples, kind enough to join us on loan from The Athletic, covering college football. Andy, any problems with the Final Four?
Not really, because it was going to be Notre Dame or A&M at 4, and you could flip a coin on those two, and I don't think anybody other than the fan bases would have been upset if one or the other had been picked. Notre Dame makes sense. You can make the case. Hey, look, they beat a team that's in the playoff. Texas A&M had a really good win against Florida, but they both got blown out by teams that are in the playoff. So, I mean, it was kind of 6-1, half dozen of the other. I just would like it to be a better system in general. You know, it doesn't need to be 4, should have been 8 all along. And every year they keep, showing us why it should be 8.
But you know what will happen, Andy? You're going to get some of these teams that get in there and they get blown out because they face Alabama or Clemson in the opening round, and then people
that happens
are,
now.
I know. I did. I said that. I said Notre Dame gets blown out or A&M gets blown out. We don't have a problem with that. But if Cincinnati goes in there and gets blown out, that's bad for college football.
Yeah, it's crazy because so if you had an eight team, and this is how they would do it. It would be your five Power Five champs get in, your highest ranked Group of Five champ gets in, and then two at-larges. So the games you'd have Oregon at Alabama. Oh, no, by the way, you get the bowls out of there and you actually play them in campus college football stadiums where they're meant to be played. So you'd have Oregon at Alabama, which people will say, okay, why is Oregon in there? They don't deserve it. Okay, but from a business perspective, you kept that side of the country engaged the entire season. You gave stakes to the Pac-12 championship game, and if Oregon gets blown out, great. That's Alabama getting a reward for earning the number one seed. You got Cincy at Clemson. Will Clemson kill Cincy? Maybe, but at least we know. And then you have Oklahoma at Ohio State and Texas A&M at Notre Dame. Who is not watching those games?
I know, I agree, but I don't know
when
do they expand, because they have the contract with ESPN. Can they break that contract? I guess all contracts are meant to be broken, but you know, we're stuck with this through what, 2023?
2026.
Oh.
And it's the deal with the bowls that's the issue, because ESPN would be fine. ESPN wants to make the conferences happy. If the conferences say we want to do an 18 playoff, ESPN will say, great, we'll pay you for that. Because, I mean, they're going to wind up paying about the same amount of money anyway you slice it. So they don't care about the packaging. They just care about the product. So if you give them an opportunity to buy the product, they'll buy it. But it's the deal with the bowls because, you know, you got these middlemen in the bowls that have been for years hijacking the way college football crowns its national champion. They were pretty useful back in the day. They're completely useless now. There is no need for them to be there. If the school, let's say the Rose Bowl, here's a good example, because the Rose Bowl has always kind of been what was in the way. And if you went to the Rose Bowl right now and said, hey, we're going to have a Big Ten and Pac-12 game in your stadium. We're going to kick it off at 2:00 Eastern time on January 1st. It's not going to be a playoff game. We're going to play those on campus. We're not going to give you as much money as we did before. ESPN is going to give all that money to the conferences. The Rose Bowl would say, well, no, we don't want to do that. And they'll say, okay, that's great. We're going to move that game to another stadium. And now you can have $0 and enjoy your monster truck pull on January 1st. And the Rose Bowl will be like, okay, we'll take some dollars over $0. That would be wonderful.
And now we have the Rose Bowl in Dallas.
Can we call it the Rose Bowl? I'm not clear on the legality of this. I don't know if I'm going to get a letter from somebody.
I know it's, you know, we got caught up in this eye test and I still don't know. I don't have great vision, but you know, the eye test with Ohio State, I want them in there in the Final Four, but I can't sit there and go, boy, they passed the eye test. You know who passes the eye test? As strange as this is going to sound, Florida does. If Florida didn't lose to
Florida's
LSU,
offense does.
I mean, that they went toe to toe with Alabama. If you said they were going to play again, I'd say absolutely. I'm all in.
Yeah.
You know, that loss to LSU, I wonder, was there, if they didn't lose to LSU, would there be a chance that Florida was in there instead of Notre Dame?
It would have been the 2018 discussion all over again. And remember in 2018, Alabama and Georgia played the really good SEC championship game where Tua gets hurt, Jalen Hurts comes in. And there was the big argument of, do you put Georgia in at number four? Even though they just lost to Alabama, I think you would have had that same discussion had Florida not lost to LSU. The problem for Florida is, yeah, you just showed you can go toe-to-toe with Alabama, but a week earlier, you just showed you can completely lay an egg. So, I mean, that's the issue with that one. But, yeah, that would have been the dominant conversation Sunday morning if Florida hadn't lost to LSU, is should Florida be number four?
You okay with Ohio State? Just because.
I am. And here's the thing. Everybody's like, well, you got to punish them, punish the Big Ten because they only played six games. Yeah. But if you punish the Big Ten by punishing Ohio State, that makes no sense. The Big Ten played at all because Ohio State and Nebraska and Iowa and those people fought to get a season played in the Big Ten. Ohio State would have loved to have played 10 games.
Yeah.
They were on the side of the ACC and the SEC and the Big 12 the entire time. So you can't punish them because their league did something stupid. So I'm fine with it. And look, it was all going to be eye test anyway because we didn't have non-conference games. We didn't get – remember, we're supposed to get Ohio State, Oregon in week two. That would have been amazing. It would have been a great data point for us to tell, okay, where's the Pac-10 stack up against the Big Ten? We don't have any idea this year because we didn't have any non-conference games. And so the only thing we can really say is the Sun Belt is better than the Big 12 because the Sun Belt went 3-0 against the Big 12.
Army is not going to a bowl game. Their head coach is going to join us top of the hour. So to explain this to me, that Army, what are they, 8-2? Not going to a bowl game.
So basically they were going to the Independence Bowl, and that was set up, and the Independence Bowl had to cancel its game because it can't get another team into the game. There have been too many opt-outs, and so the Independence Bowl does not have an opponent for them, and all the other bowls, because they're contractually tied to different conferences, had to fill through the different conferences that they're contractually tied to. And it's a great injustice because Army deserves to be there. You know, you've got a 2-win South Carolina playing in a bowl and Army's not playing in a bowl. It's ridiculous. And it's interesting because Army's former commandant is the president of South Carolina. You'd think he'd say, look, out of respect, we're going to stay home and you guys go play in the bowl game. And I, you know, you don't want anybody to have any issues with COVID-19, but if somebody does, and it seems like given the number of teams that are playing in bowls, there's a chance somebody does. Let's throw Army in there if somebody has to back out. Let them play in a bowl game. They've earned it.
Yeah. And that's why I go back to this when people say, oh, you know, these schools that aren't in the Power Five conferences, you know, they wouldn't be able to go toe-to-toe with these schools that are. And I go, let me take you back to Army on the road against Oklahoma and Kyler Murray and went into overtime.
Oh.
So it's one game, and maybe there's a blowout, but you tell me Oklahoma came out of that game going, man, we're so much better than Army.
No, and Army took Michigan to the limit the following year. Look, Army's a good team. There's no reason Army shouldn't be in a bowl game. And this is another one of my issues with the bowl system in general. Again, you don't need these middlemen. Like, ESPN owns and operates 17 bowls now. You got the Myrtle Beach Bowl coming on later today. Conway, South Carolina on the surf turf at Coastal Carolina. Those bowls have no middlemen. ESPN puts it on, the teams show up, and you're good to go. And that's the way they could do it throughout college football if they wanted to. And just set up the best matchups you can instead of having, well, we got to have Big Ten number three versus SEC number four. Don't do that. If anything, this season taught us that things might be better if you schedule a little more on the fly anyway. I mean, that Coastal Carolina BYU game was set up on 2 days' notice. It was probably the best game of the season. So why not have it where the leagues get together with ESPN and say, we're going to create 39 postseason games. But we're not going to set them up by conference or anything like that. We're just going to match them up for the best possible matchups, the best television matchups, the most deserving teams get the best games. And that's how you do it. And everybody would be fine with that. Viewers would love it. And you don't give money to people who don't do anything.
Andy, you're making way too much sense. Andy, you're making way too much
sense. I know.
You got to stop. You got to stop with this. Because you know what?
It's just,
in 365 days, Andy, we're probably having this same conversation.
Oh, 100%. And probably more so and more frustrated because they will have gone back to all of the old ways of doing things. It will be, we must schedule non-conference games 12 years in advance because that is what we do. We must do that. But you don't have to do that. If this year taught us anything, you don't have to do any of the things that you thought you had to do. So think about it. If you're gonna press the reset button, now would be a great time.
Great to talk to you as always. We appreciate your insights. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to you, Andy, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Dan.
That's Andy Staples. Andy works for The Athletic.
Be sure to catch the live edition of The Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We've talked a lot about college football and, you know, the playoffs. Now we have the bowl games. Who can play? South Carolina's got two wins. They're playing in a bowl game. Army is 9-2. They're not playing in a bowl game, and their head coach, Jeff Monken, joins us on the program. Coach, thanks for joining us. So explain this to me and how you explained it to your kids, they're not playing in a bowl game.
Well, first, I got to give you, can I give you an autograph story? Because I love your autograph story.
Sure, sure.
So I was an autograph seeker as a kid. Like you, go to the ball games, hang out along the third baseline or the first baseline by the dugouts. So I want to tell you two stories about autographs. One was J.R. Richards, so the pitcher for the Astros. Got an autograph before he had a stroke and after he had a stroke. I thought that was pretty cool. He's a great pitcher. Admired him and his career. But my favorite autograph was from Don Sutton. Now, he wasn't my favorite player growing up, but kind of like you, I had a little conversation with Don on the third baseline out in right field at the Astrodome when I was about 12 years old. And he's coming along, and Don Sutton's a great pitcher. And I said, "Oh, Mr. Sutton, can I have your autograph?" And he comes over, and he said, "You know, you got to say please." He said, "You know, manners always counts." And I said, "Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just so excited to get your autograph. I got good manners. I was just so excited to get your autograph. I'm sorry I yelled at you." And he said, "Don't convince me. Show me." Oh. And I've never forgotten that he said that. And I still use that today. I've used it for my entire career. When a guy talks about doing something and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, or I'm going to do better, I say, "Don't convince me, show me." And I've shared with him where I got that quote. So I got Don Sutton to thank for that quote. But getting to our bowl game and you know, we've had a great year. I'm so proud of our guys. We've had two very emotional weeks playing the Army-Navy game and then coming right back to play for the Commander-in-Chief's Trophy this past Saturday here at West Point against Air Force. And our guys just battled and did a great job. And we were really looking forward to the opportunity to play in the postseason. We've been set up to play in the Independence Bowl for over a year and have been looking forward to that. Like everybody, the reward of playing in the postseason in college football. And as the day went along yesterday and we realized that we were kind of getting pushed out, and I understand why, and I'm not mad at the system. It's a system that's created lots and lots of opportunities for teams to play. It's the same system that really kept us from having a guarantee yesterday. But there's a lot of teams that have had a chance to play, and I'm not mad at the 2-win teams or the 3-win teams that are playing. In fact, I commend them that they are taking the opportunity to play this great game. What I'm disappointed is the teams that had a chance to play, clamored for the opportunity to play this fall, are now deciding they don't want to play. I don't understand it. And we've got a team who is deserving of playing in a bowl game. They're a great team. They're not the most talented team in the country, not the most talented team I've coached, but they're the best team I've coached. And they're a group of young men who have made a pledge of commitment to serve this nation. And we've got seniors who have earned the opportunity to play in a bowl game who were in tears last night. 6 months from now, they're gonna take a pledge to serve in the United States Army and ultimately are willing to pay the ultimate price for us to enjoy the freedoms we have and the way of life that we enjoy to play this game and to have the right to say, "Yes, I want to play," or "No, I don't want to play." But when there's a team like that, that is uniquely positioned to represent the 1.3 million men and women who serve on active duty in our United States Army, they deserve the opportunity to not just play for themselves, but to represent those men and women. And I hear all that we've been through, it's always for all this team has been through this year, we're just deciding to opt out. Well, I challenge for all that our soldiers have been through and all that their families have been through, for families who have had loved ones deployed for a year or more and been away from their families and will spend this holiday season away from their families. We owe it to them to represent them. And we want the opportunity to do that. We're hoping that there'll somehow there'll be a chance, but I talked to our guys about it. I told them the truth on how it got to this point. They were obviously disappointed, but what they said was, "Coach, If we got a chance, then let us continue to prepare and get ready." And that's what we've done all year. We've just prepared. We're not planned. We had a 12-game schedule in July, and we played three of those original teams, but still managed to play 11 games. We've prepared, not planned. And it's what an infantry unit does. They prepare, they don't plan. They don't know when the battle's coming. They don't know what the weather's going to be. They don't know how many bad guys are going to be on the other side, what their firepower is, but they're going to be prepared. And our country can be proud to know that we've got soldiers out there that are protecting our freedoms and our way of life. And that we've got football players who are playing on this team that have made that same commitment. So our guys are just a great bunch of guys. So we're going to stay here for the next few days. We're going to figure out if we get a chance to play and see what comes of it.
How important is it for the coach at the academy to have been through the academy to understand what these men and women go through, to kind of understand what their schedule is, their life is, what happens after they graduate, get deployed? Like there's a whole lot that goes into this, coach, that it's not just come on in and play some football for me.
It is. And it's important that we all understand that and embrace that. And it's one of the things I love about West Point. I've had the opportunity to serve as a coach at two of our service academies. And it's been a great pleasure, my career, to be able to do that, to serve these young men and women who are going to serve our nation. And I didn't go to school here, but I'm proud to represent our United States Army in this way and to serve in this way, to develop the leaders of character that our Army needs and deserves to lead our soldiers. And I understand this place, and I embrace what we are as an institution. And I know our players realize that about me, that though I didn't experience this, that I understand their life and their commitment. And when we do bring a young man in here, it's not just all about football, but that's what makes them so special.
But also, it's one thing to say goodbye to a senior. This is different. When you say goodbye to your seniors, you don't know what's going to happen to them. It's not like, hey, I'll keep an eye on you in the NFL, or, you know, you get a job as an accountant somewhere. You're saying goodbye to men who you might be saying goodbye to.
They may have to pay the ultimate price, but they've made that choice and they've made that commitment. And, you know, all of us should be incredibly thankful for every man, woman in this nation that takes that pledge. And there are millions of Americans who have taken that pledge and currently serve, and those that will take that pledge. And our guys do too. And, you know, our guys go into all walks of life. They go into all different kinds of jobs in the Army. They don't all have the same job, but they've all made the same commitment. And I'm really proud of them. And I would love to see them be rewarded with this opportunity of a bowl game. They desperately want to play.
And hopefully we can give even more publicity to this. And we appreciate your coming on, and we're happy to be able to help facilitate this so they do get a chance. And maybe there's a school that opts out that they can't play and you guys slide in. You guys have certainly been ready to play anybody, anywhere. And I brought this up when you'll get people who will say, well, you know, these teams that aren't in the Power Five conferences, they can't really play with the big boys. And I always bring up when Army went to Oklahoma a couple of years ago and they had Kyler Murray and you took him into overtime. So I don't want to hear, oh, you know, those smaller schools can't stick with the big guys. I don't know how you did it that day, but you did it.
Well, this team in the last 3 years has taken two top 10 teams to overtime and double overtime, at Michigan a year ago. And I assure you that it wasn't because of our talent. We got some talented guys. We got some good football players. But our guys just play really hard. They play together. They care deeply for each other. There's a sense of brotherhood in this program that's unlike any team I've ever been a part of. And it's because of the shared experience that they'll have after they graduate that creates a bond in this team. And we didn't win either of those games. So I guess they're right. We weren't able to finish the job, but we've won some Power Five games here since I've been here as the head coach, and we're going to have a chance to play some more, and hopefully we'll be able to come away with some victories. But and just the spirit of this team and what they mean to this country. I think it's great for college football. I think it's obviously great for our players, but for those men and women that we represent, I think it's important that we play and not just say, hey, we're going to opt out.
Well, you can't give up. I mean, that's who you are. And, you know, hopefully I'll get a chance to get up there next season. I appreciate the invitation that I got for the Army Navy game. I got a compromised immune system and, probably the last person who should be traveling anywhere, but that game means that much to me that I wanted to be there to experience it. So congratulations on the season. And, hopefully there's somebody listening who says, you're right, that Army should be playing in a bowl game this year, Coach. So thank you. And, our best to you.
Same to you. Thanks a lot. We'll look forward to seeing you at the Army Navy game next year.
All right, Coach Monken. Yeah, we're ready to go after that speech. Damn, now I'm really mad that Army's not playing a bowl game. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. There are quite a few Jets fans and big-name Jets fans. Hank Azaria is one of our favorites. He, of course, gave us Brockmire. The actor-comedian does a lot of voices on The Simpsons, and he is a Jets fan, and Hank joins us now. Hank, how do you feel today?
Well, Mekhi, I mean, you're right, Dan. Mixed emotions, and the emotions that are mixed are despair and anger is the mix.
How did you feel watching that game?
It's been insane watching the Jets this season because definitely rooting for them to lose, but it really goes beyond that. I mean, Mekhi is dead wrong. It's been this weird thing, I swear, where I am so passionately rooting against the Jets that my favorite team that week is whoever's playing against the Jets, which is a tremendous win-win because until this week, I now always win as opposed to being a Jet fan up until now. I almost always lose. But when, I mean, look, this was inevitable, I guess. I mean, they should have won that Raider game. They almost beat the Patriots. They almost beat the Broncos. They're lucky. They only won the one game, I should say. But it's been a really almost psychotic season for me.
But it almost feels like this was your Patrick Ewing if you're the Knicks. Like you have a chance. We're bad. We won the lottery. We get Patrick Ewing. You know, it didn't pay off in a championship, but you became relevant. Like the Jets aren't relevant, haven't been relevant in quite some time here. And it's Jetsian to try to, you know, you're bad, but you're not bad enough to get Trevor Lawrence here.
Exactly. I mean, look, this is, you know, this is just it for a Jet fan. A Jets, Mets, Knicks fan, by the way. I mean, this is like saying, are you surprised that Lucy didn't let Charlie Brown kick the football? You know, you're bummed, but no. Let's see, a little quiz, Dan.
Okay.
So let's go with that metaphor. Charlie Brown and Lucy in the football. In this scenario with the Jets win yesterday, who's Charlie Brown, who's Lucy, and who's the football? See if you can guess.
I don't like word problems, Hank. the Jets fans are the football.
No. Jets fans are Charlie Brown.
Oh, okay.
Who's Lucy?
Tom Brady and the Patriots.
that would have been true in years past. But no, Lucy is the Jets themselves. It's the Jets organization. And the football, I'll accept either answer. I'd either accept just the football, since we're talking about football. Football is the football. Or the football could represent joy in life, actual happiness.
Okay. So recap now. Lucy, yeah. Charlie Brown in the football represents...
All Jets fans, including myself, are Charlie Brown, poor, sad Charlie Brown, who can't ever get it right. And Lucy, evil Lucy, are the Jets organization, who just snatch joy away from us always. And the football is either the football or actual joy in living.
Now, I think I've seen a picture of you with Sam Darnold. Are you a Sam Darnold guy? But you were willing, like you were, do you have a relationship that you can see other quarterbacks?
That's actually Jim Brockmeyer, if you notice, with Sam Darnold.
Brockmeyer.
That's Brockmeyer right there. See, that's not me. That's Brockmeyer. And I was backstage. I believe I was doing Get Up or something. Get Up, Get Down, Morning Cold Pizza, Stop Yourself, Don't Touch Me, one of these shows. I think it was Don't Touch Me.
How would Brockmeyer have called the final seconds of the Jets beating the Rams yesterday?
Well, I think they just put up in one long wail and moan, like a banshee wail. But I've been working on this. So I emailed this to Fritz. I want Brockmeyer to, you know, Brockmeyer is famous for saying that the Mets are the Yankees of not being the Yankees. Okay. I want to expand on this, that the Jets are the LeBron James of being worse than the Knicks, and the Knicks are the Patrick Mahomes of being the Knicks, of being themselves. It's a lot of math. I'm giving you a lot of math.
I know. Word problems here. I didn't think Brockmeyer was that deep.
Yeah, I've given this all a lot of thought.
Only after he's been drinking is he that deep.
Yeah, only after.
Well, keep your head up, though.
This is just par for. Can I tell you how every year goes for me? Can I share with you as a Jets, Mets, Knicks fan? So we're in December. We're almost at the end of the year. By now, I have definitely given up on the Jets. Usually that's by Thanksgiving at the outside.
Yeah.
This year was weird because we had this weird Trevor Lawrence hope. Now that's destroyed pretty much, almost for sure. So then around this time of year, you turn to the Knicks. Go, well, let's see what the Knicks can do, right? We'll see what happens. By, I'd say, February, that's not going to really happen with the Knicks anymore. So you're off the Knicks. But you got spring training, so you look forward to, well, let's see what the Mets got going on this year. That dream usually is done by the All-Star break by July, maybe August, just about in time to say, well, let's see what the Jets have going on this year. On and on and on until I die, Dan.
You're on this loop. It's just you'll never get out of that loop. I was wondering, though, could the Simpsons do an episode of the Jets today? How much sports do the Simpsons do?
Well, every once in a while, one of the most famous classic episodes is that Homer at the Bat episode, which is actually featured in like the Baseball Hall of Fame right now, where we had all these baseball players. A great episode. Every once in a while, they touch on sports, but actually, I'm going to ask for like a Jets, Mets, Knicks.
But who does Homer root for? I mean, he's in the Midwest. He's probably a Chiefs fan, wouldn't he be?
Well, the local minor league team is the Springfield Isotopes, and that's who Homer's a fan of. Which I think they actually did name. I think there's actually a real team in the Isotopes.
They're in Texas, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, the Isotopes, and I thought that's such a great nickname. Like, there's nobody who's known as the Isotopes other than the Isotopes. But if you had Homer somehow screw up the Jets. Went, you know, like this would have been perfect. Like Homer somehow would have cost the Jets yesterday against the Rams and they don't get Trevor Lawrence. And you could have Trevor Lawrence would look great in a cartoon with the flowing hair there. I don't mean to tell the geniuses at Simpsons how to do their job, but you know, but you're noodling this. So maybe Matt would be interested in at least you guys. I mean, come on. After all these years, you got to. You're running out
I'll pass
of ideas.
It along. It'll be therapeutic for me. Yeah. And God knows we've done an episode about everything else. Well, I got to circle back to Mekhi Becton for a second.
Okay.
That was absurd and terrible what he said. I mean, of course we understand. No one expects the players to tank. Nobody expects Mekhi Becton or anybody, not or Sam Darnold, not to try. You know, and they almost, so no one would ever fault them or to be happy that they won a game. But you got to at least tip your hat to the – I guess he's too young to understand.
Yeah, but he's got to have Sam Darnold's back. Like, literally, he has his back. I mean, Sam Darnold wins, he can keep his job, Hank.
You can't say to Jet fans, you're not a true fan if you were rooting for the Jets to lose. You can say, I understand how Jets fans could feel that way, but you got to understand we're trying to win every game we can. We got our jobs and our lives on the line here. No one would fault him for that, but you're not a true fan? Come on now.
I don't think you'd say it to Mekhi Becton's face, though.
I would through a Zoom.
You'd be that's a big man that you'd be saying. It's I think what you said is really stupid. All right. You know,
I didn't say it was stupid.
I know. But that was the feeling I got. Does this conversation make you feel better? Was this cathartic in any way for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel very privileged that I get to, you know, speak to the likes of you, like whine to the likes of you about my Jets, Mets, Knicks sadness.
Does your wife understand this?
Oh God, she's a Philadelphia fan, so my house is horrible for me.
Well, yeah, she's used to heartache too.
Yeah, but you know, my father-in-law, who's a lovely guy, talks like he says goodbye to me on the phone. This is how he says goodbye. He goes, "All right, I love you. Mets suck." He says goodbye.
Well, with that, I'll say goodbye to you, Hank, and happy holidays, and Mets suck.
Ah, that actually made me feel warm inside.
Thank you, Hank. It's great to talk to you.
You too, Dan. Happy holidays to everybody.
Thank you, buddy. That's Hank Azaria.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.